Do you feel the calling to help the world heal in these times of uncertainty from violence and trauma using powerful spiritual tools combined with action? Do you want to shift your personal and our collective destiny lines from war, oppression, and genocide into peace? If so, I warmly welcome you here today. This is Destiny Lines, Sacred Activism for Peacemaking and Ending Violence. My name is Rachel Mann, PhD. I am a sacred activist, social scientist, shamanic healer, and spiritual mentor. Come learn from my stories, experiences, and research, as well as from those of visionary thought leaders who are working on the spiritual frontiers of sacred activism to end violence. I invite you to step up with me into this extremely important work. Find out how it is part of the fulfillment of your unique mission and purpose in life. Let's go. There's no time to lose. I am very happy to welcome my listeners to Destiny Lines. As you probably already know about me, I am, among other things, a longtime shamanic practitioner, healer, and spiritual teacher. This is why I am so pleased to introduce you to today's guest, Christina Pratt, founder and owner of the Last Mask Center for Shamanic Healing, and herself a sacred activist. I am deeply impressed by the breadth and depth of her knowledge of worldwide shamanism, but even more than that, her insights into our human condition and how our conditioning cuts us off from our authenticity, and in the end, is a part of what is perpetuating systems of oppression. So I've been digging around in her voluminous podcast series that you can find at lastmaskcenter.org. And I just love her energy, her wisdom, and her view. So before we dive in with Christina, let me give you some further information about her. So she's a healer, author, and teacher, as I would say, of exceptional clarity, humor, and practicality. At Last Mask Center, she is pioneering new shamanic techniques to deal with complex trauma, the healing of our ancestral lines, and initiation of our young into what she calls spiritual adulthood. The Last Mask Center offers healing sessions, online classes, and in-person retreats. She is also the host of the international live internet radio show, Why Shamanism Now? That's the podcast series that I mentioned, but it's actually a radio show, and is the author of the 2-volume set, An Encyclopedia of Shamanism, and is a presenter at shamanic summits, including those for Shift Network and Sounds True. The mission of Last Mask Center is to bring the foundational wisdom of the ancient peoples into our contemporary lives to heal, innovate, and become the medicine needed in our time. As she puts it, as diverse humans together, we can create a world in which all life flourishes, and we hold sacred the responsibility to be sustainable and just in our every action. So I am so happy to have you here, Christina, and I'd like you to just dive in and tell us more about yourself, how you came to do this work. I know everybody is eager to hear.
Thank you, Rachel. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here. Yeah. Well, I think it's important to kind of land things in story. I'm trying to do a better job of that these days. and mainly because the leading edge of my own learning right now in being a practitioner in the world is the importance of story and what happens to cultures when their stories unravel and they lose, basically they're letting advertising write their stories for them. So for me, I began in my early 20s asking very intentionally and deeply, why am I here? And I was testing a theory that I had learned from this woman that I had been studying with. Basically, her theory was that we are here in this incarnation for the development of our soul, which was news to me at that time in my early 20s. And I felt the need to test that hypothesis immediately, because if that were true, I needed to course correct seriously from the direction that I was going in, which was pretty much what I call run program. I was pretty much doing what the culture of the United States teaches good white girls to do. And if I didn't actually have the right plan here, I needed to shift gears quickly. I asked myself, what would be the one choice I could make that would most thoroughly and quickly test this hypothesis that I'm actually here in this life for the development of my soul, which that's a challenging thing. So that it leads to the next question, which is, you know, why am I here? So I left my job, my relationship, my home, and my life on the West Coast, and I moved to Manhattan and went back to dancing at 27 years old. And if anybody who's listening who actually understands the life of a professional dancer at 27 years old, you're actually already starting to age out. And I was just starting. So the whole thing was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I did it nonetheless, because dancing was the last place that I had felt whole and connected to ecstasy and, you know, an ecstatic experience in life. And what happened to me in testing this hypothesis and asking this question again and again and again, why am I here? I provoked an initiatory experience. And I lost my relationship, my normal, ordinary relationship with reality for a number of consecutive days in New York City.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, I hear you.
Which in and of itself is its own story. One of the things I still to this day, though, remember that was so fascinating about it was I was still going to work that because at work we had, I was sewing in a costume shop for $9 an hour. Okay. And in that job, we had this hand sign that we would do when we walked in the door that just basically said, don't talk to me today. Just give me my work and let me sit at my sewing machine, sew my stuff. I don't want to talk. And we all respected that boundary. So I just come to work, do the hand sign. Nobody talked to me for days. And I was a wreck. And what I noticed on the way walking to work, because I was too poor to take the subway to work, I always walked past the same people panhandling or whatever in their corners. This very territorial thing in New York. Everybody has their place. And these people were speaking to me by name in coherent, clear sentences and having many conversations with me on the way past. And I understood them completely and they knew me completely. I could not understand what anybody else was saying. And so I really, there was a moment when I went, wow, okay, this is, you're in trouble, right? There's something going on here you need to resolve. Now, because I am not raised in any kind of monotheistic religion, because I'm not going to dump on anyone's faith. However, idea of one God kind of thing didn't take well with me, especially the male God thing. Consequently, while I'm having this serious crisis, I do not process it in my mind as a battle of good and evil over my soul. Mm-hmm. I process it like a good Capricorn as I am being tested, and I'm pretty sure I'm failing. anyway.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, it was really challenging. And as I came through the other side of it, I met the next challenge that we meet in the United States and basically the cultures that are our ancestral cultures, if you're not an indigenous person here in North America, which is there was no context for this experience. There was no story that held it. There was no community to share it with, to give me context for it.
Right.
So what was important about it that I did understand at the end as this aspect of myself left And as I started to reach for her, the voice of the spirit that had been in this initiatory relationship with me said, if you grab her back now, you'll never get rid of her. So I didn't. But I'm like, who is she? What just happened? I was completely confused. But what I understood at that time is that this was the most significant thing that would likely ever happen to me. Mm-hmm. And that my task now was to go forward as this person that I had become, even though I didn't have anything else to go on, but the deep knowing that I was not the same person I had been. And this was the most important thing that would ever happen to me in my life. And then I went forward from there. The other thing that I realized then very quickly is that I was a much better version of myself than I had been before as well.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. So in that really clear time, the old Shamanism magazine, Shaman's Drum, was still being published at that time. It was coming to the home of the person who actually had the legal lease on the apartment, which I was living in illegally, mm-hmm. as an illegal sublet. And I just stuck it in her mail envelope and sent it on for a year. I hadn't even cracked the seal. But after this experience, I cracked the seal, immediately opened to this article interviewing Sandra Ingerman about soul retrieval, and it dropped in like the absolute most clear moment to date of my entire life. Oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. As if I remembered that clarity that you have before you get born about why you're coming. And it was like the door closed after that. It's like, wait, you're supposed to forget all that and then go through this long, hard process of discovering it. But it's like I got this sneak peek back into what I had absolutely known on my way here. So there are many issues that are real issues that we need to address around a white woman learning to do soul retrieval work when soul retrieval is a practice for dealing with trauma that is brought to us through the lives of Indigenous people. Mm-hmm. Right. So 30 years ago, I just did what anybody would do with one step on the path of what they were supposed to be doing is I just said, what do I need to do to take this step? I didn't understand yet. I was so ignorant that I didn't understand the ramifications of that. Nonetheless, I did. I learned what I needed to learn to do soul retrieval. And that's how everything else that I've done has unfolded. But the piece that gets left out of the story is I was there asking that question because of a teacher prior. And what that teacher taught me was how to do repair at the energetic level that gets set asunder when we experience trauma and soul loss. So there is this internal way that we fragment, that we lose connection with ourselves, that many practices people are deeply committed to and deeply engaged in do not reunite. And that is a really important thing because much of the challenges that we are facing at this time, whether they're health or climate or social, political, if you follow them all back to the root, they come back to the fact that we have not been able to repair where we have disconnected internally, and thus we continue to make the same choices out of our unresolved trauma. And much of that trauma is now normalized, right? It's considered like normal American life to accept certain kinds of trauma that are systemic, collective, traumatic behavior that creates trauma, and we just keep doing it to each other. And so there's this huge piece around coming into the really effective practices of shamanic people, which is on sort of one side of what is effective in our sort of therapeutic practices. But the other side of this is none of those things really change us if we do not repair at the energetic level inside our energy body.
Right.
So for me, everything that I've done then has grown out of coming into this shamanic practice as my calling, the best that I can understand it, as a person in a world where no one's helping me, right? And yet it's based in this other practice of energy clearing. So anyway, that's how I got here, which is, you know, the 500 hours of free podcast listening at Why Shamanism Now, Last Mass Center, a 4-year training program, a whole curriculum of online courses. And I still to this day, still do my shamanic practice.
Yeah.
Right. But what I also hear, Christina, and I kind of want to link this a little bit between the journey of the individual, right? And then the journey of the collective. And what I'm hearing and what you're saying, and which is a big part of my own work, is that the two are obviously very intimately interconnected, because we are interconnected in our bodies, in terms of our energy field, in terms of consciousness and all of this sort of thing. You know, so what I'm also hearing, though, is that there is a critical process that has to do with energy, which is the wound that is still active, you know, the trauma that is still active deep in the subconscious, and then how that intersects with, you know, ancestral wounds and so on. So what I'm hearing from you is this important process, one, that it's important for the individual, and what I'm also hearing is from you, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that's connected also to the collective, the planetary, and so on. And so what I want to hear is a little bit more about this from you, and then how you see that connection working.
Yeah. So for me, I would say that I went on the kind of path a person that is raised in the United States is sort of stuck on. And now I just sort of speak of it as the broken path, because mm-hmm. I feel that as I've done now many, 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 many sessions with many people now, because of the radio show, not just in the United States, but all over the world, you know, there are things I feel confident in saying, you know, this is what's going on in this not exactly visible world. And these things we are doing are happening because of these things. And so with that said, what shamanism offered, what the philosophies, I would say, of shamanic cultures offered was a missing piece for me in my just regular, ordinary reality, public school educated, went to college, studied science kind of brain, which is not just that you are soul incarnate and you're in this life to learn.
Right.
And because where you can go with that is, okay, well, if we're all doing that, why are we all here? If we're all a face of God, like, what's the point? Why do we need to study? Right.
Yeah.
The math doesn't add up, right?
Right.
And so what shamanism brings into that as well, yes, everything, not just every human, everything is a manifestation of that dreaming, mm-hmm. right? And you are here because you have a unique genius in this life. I don't have a second chance. If I don't do me in the uniqueness of me in this life, it doesn't get done.
Right.
And thus weakens the fabric of the divine, because the divine doesn't get to know itself in this particular manifestation. What I mean is that you are expressing what is unique about your soul in this life. Yes, you're teaching. Yes, you're healing. Yes, you're learning. Yes, you're doing all these basic things that make you a good human. And all of those things are supporting you in expressing your unique genius through what you do in your life. So everything you do in your life is potentially a vehicle for your unique genius. But mm-hmm. this is a very confusing thing for people that are raised in America that think their soul's purpose should be a job title. Okay, so that's the beginning, because if I can't orient in that and orient my grounding, my connection to the invisible world, my boundaries mm-hmm. with the physical world, my boundaries with the invisible world, you know, all of the energy body stuff, my personal stuff, towards why I'm here, I will always be off in my interpretation of reality, because I need to do what I'm here to do. And I need to do it in a way that is good for all living things. So if I am only focusing on why am I here, what is my unique genius, which I have to, but if that's all I'm focusing on, then essentially I'm moving out from the will center. I'm willing myself in the world, and my will needs to be clarified for me because mine, right? But then it needs to come up into my heart, where then I say, okay, but is it good for all living things, Div? And then I move up in the higher energy of the body from my heart up to figure out, okay, well, how do I do this then? This thing that is me, right. How do I do it in a way that is authentic to me and yet good for all living things? So that's already relatively complicated, especially if you don't have any elders priming you with stories that help you understand how to do that. We're all reinventing the wheel here. Right. And then you add to that the fact that there are ancestors behind you and descendants in front of you that you're also in service and in relationship with.
Right. Right.
However, many of our ancestors did not live well. They did not die well. They did not become ancestral helping spirits. And so they're an impact, like the ancestors that need to be reconciled and healed, impact your individual efforts to get clear on why you're here and what you're meant to do. So without a healthy culture. And so this is part of the roots for me of the sacred activism. Is if all we are trying to do is find a way to live our unique genius in the system that currently exists, we will fail. Mm-hmm. And if I am dehumanized and making choices out of that dehumanization, I will not only continue to create trauma for others, other humans, right? But I can't even get to a place where I start to grant personages and accept the personage, the right, the reality of beingness and all other living things. And we don't have the skills to do that right now. That's the really key piece about truly being able to do that repair in our energy body, as well as being willing to add shamanic healing to a valid part of the healing landscape. That is that shredded fabric of the collective reality. Many years ago, I was struggling with the fact that I felt ready as the student, but the teacher wasn't coming, wasn't happening. And I was getting pretty tortured by that internally. And I was on my knees, actually, in despair about it. And asking, I had helping spirits at the time that I was working with, and asking, what is going on? You know, like, what is going on? And they showed me a graph, like a graph. I want a teacher, okay. Right? They showed me a graph. And on this graph, there was a steady rate of incline, you know, just a slanting line.
Yeah.
And I'm doing the big swooping curve of exponential growth. And it was a graph of growth. And there was exponential growth and there was regular growth. And they showed me that the path from student to teacher is an incline. And that what is going on in the world is changing now exponentially. So if you do not start learning to change exponentially with what is going on, you'll stay on the incline. Humanity, this was now you, not just you, Christina, you, humanity, are going to be on this incline. You're not going to be part of what's living on Earth and growing anymore, because what's happening here on the Earth is changing exponentially. So learn to change exponentially. So this idea that we have to gain again the skills to lean into the discomfort of the situation, all of this is really at the core of this 4-year training program that I do, mm-hmm. which is how do we approach being a human in the world, which currently coming out of this broken culture, that have the skills to address the actual problems in our time, right? And right. So it's teaching. Us to think more the way Indigenous people think. Because while I have spent, and I'm deeply grateful for the time that I've spent with the multiple different cultures that I've spent time with, I do not practice their traditions, period.
Right.
None,
right.
Not a piece, right?
Right?
Because they're not mine to practice. What I was learning, what questions do they ask? How do they ask them? How do they problem solve? But also, what questions have they already asked so that they have this healthy culture, right? So they have this other system. What questions have already been asked and answered and are functional answers that are sustainable today? And so my experience with other cultures has been simply to try to find out what are the right questions, because my culture isn't asking them. I understand where we are coming from, and we have to be our own medicine. Yeah. We will not succeed if all we're doing with our activism is basically creating ways for people to be happy, or maybe everybody feel equal in a system that is inherently unjust and dehumanizing. Doesn't understand how to recognize that a very small percentage of the people cannot use the majority of the resources on the planet without sustainable in that use and recycling and replenishing. Anyway,
it is a big mess. And you've painted the picture so beautifully. I was particularly struck by the fact that there was something that indigenous cultures, and I'm going to say more intact indigenous cultures, past and present, right? Because there's been so much cultural destruction, right? And spiritual destruction and so on and so forth. Although there's a lot, you know, that's still living and still vibrant and still acting, still here and present. And, you know, many indigenous teachers stepping out, you know, to teach not only their people, but also, you know, people across the planet. So I think the frame of this is that the shamanic reality that you're describing, the path of shamanism, has emerged out of Westerners' contacts with, study with, experiences with Native and Indigenous traditions, and also with non-Native shamanic teachers, and that there is a dynamic blend of sort of, in many cases, of Western psychology, psychological understandings with all those. What I'm hearing you say, and I want to elucidate, and maybe have you elucidate more about your, for our listeners, is this idea that we can, through certain ceremonies, practices, ways of being, connect with this bigger kind of cosmic spiritual reality with spirits, spirit helpers, spirit guides, with creator spirit by whatever name. And that in so doing, we're able to get key guidance, information, as well as energetic juicing and healing. Maybe ask you to clarify that a bit, both in terms of how that's going to help shift the paradigm. And then also say just a little bit more about what it is that these cultures, these indigenous cultures, have that is missing, say, in Western psychology, science, philosophy, and so on, that will contribute to, to ending the violence, at least for future generations, or ending this broken, right, getting us off this broken path, as you call it.
Yeah, violence is a whole nother question in it as well. If I go to your first question, put that in a nutshell, the way that I look at it is, I have to constantly ask myself, am I thinking as an Indigenous person, right? Am I, in essence, a shamanic person in the contemporary world doing contemporary things?
Right.
Or am I a contemporary person doing shamanic things? Because as long as I'm still thinking as a contemporary, in this case, Westerner, that's even a problematic word these days, but
yeah, I know,
I'm still thinking in that frame, then I'm not practicing shamanism.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I have to constantly reality test myself to make sure that I'm actually thinking about this as I have been trained largely by my spirit help. I should have said this earlier. This is a little bit more context, that I actually have a set of teachings that are like the very beginning of an Indigenous culture. There's a community. There's a cosmology that they believe in that is shared primarily through their stories that they share with each other. And out of that comes a set of teachings, which is about how they live and how they engage with life and how they express their uniqueness in a way that is good for all living things. So it keeps them in the context with their community, with their own authenticity, and with that cosmology and that it's a generative, repairing, and balanced system, right, that works whatever environment they live in, right? Because that's the other thing interesting is that they're doing many different practices that allow that community of people to be in that same kind of balanced, repairing and restoring relationship in whatever environment they're in as well.
Yes.
And that they're living in a way that is relatively sustainable, often in some very fragile environments like the rainforest, right? So this is, right. From my perspective, that's successful.
Right? Yeah. That's yeah, awesome. I got that. I agree with you.
And so, so the thing is, they came to the these pre-contact, right, indigenous people specifically, because many of these cultures have been broken. So we can look back to pre-contact and go, oh, that makes complete sense. But what's more interesting to me, right, because it's not my mind to live as they live. What's interesting to me is how these cultures that have been absolutely violently torn apart by colonialism and conversion and mining on their land and not clean water and all of these things, right? How they still apply indigenous thought to their today's problems and come up with answers that still support the individual and the community and the culture. They don't require dehumanizing an entire group of people. So I'm just learning. And so right. I've accepted, I'm spending my whole life learning a different way of approaching problem solving, because I do believe I have a piece of the medicine for this time, just like everybody else, not any more than anybody else.
Yeah.
But I also live in a cosmology and a community with a set of teachings that we share. And so that is a place that I can go to where I am having a very different experience of my life here in the everyday world, where I go to the grocery store and I still drive a car and I
taxes,
right?
Whatever. Yeah, we live here, right? We have to operate in that the particular context that we find ourselves in, and yet find, as you say, that pathway of integrity, authenticity, and you know what I would call keep an enduring connection to the sacred, you know, which is that web of interconnection, right? And the tools and methods that are available to us shamanically, I mean, it's many different, right? You know, ritual and ceremony and energy healing and journeying and prayer and you know, other ways of tuning in. And it's like walking a tightrope. You know, you said really succinctly is that that idea of we live in a system, okay, and so then how do we keep that reciprocity going between our authentic self and then being in service through our authenticity and what you call your particular unique genius to the, and what is that medicine? That's the medicine, right?
What matters in this conversation about activism and meeting the challenges of our time is that when we humans are faced with something that really feels pretty impossible. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that are really crumbling right now in their mental health around all of the things that we are faced with. Everybody's got their own.
We can make the list, right? Yeah.
A lot.
Right. It's a huge
people
amount.
Are crumbling, right?
Right.
And so there's many ways that I have faced what felt impossible many, many times in my life. And what I finally learned, I mean, it took a long time, like, you know, a decade or more, to learn that when it is impossible, my reflex now, when I hear myself going, oh, this is just impossible, I go, right, go to spirit. You have to ask the right question. So there is an issue of, there's a learning curve about learning how to go to spirit. Like I said earlier, like when I was, you learn how to ask questions to divine and to receive from spirit answers that you then need to go through the next piece, which is how do you take action on this kind of information? But my point is when you put in the effort to learn how to do that, how to listen, how to ask, how to receive that answer, how to interpret that answer accurately, and then how to put it into action in the world, that technology is what allows us to step off that incline and onto that exponential curve and move with our world, which is moving exponentially right now. And we don't think exponentially very well at all as humans. It's really hard for us. And so learning to move exponentially, to take big leaps and still land on the curve and be contributing in a way that is actually valuable. You know, I know so many people that are so sincere about the ceremony that they do in this community, but I've never heard anyone be able to answer the question of how did it work?
Right.
It's always like, oh, well, you can't measure that. It's like, well, maybe you can't measure it, but is it effective? No one even goes to ask if it's effective. Right. Back to the learning. What if it's not effective? Well, then how do we change it so that it can be? I mean, it's like more of a practical relationship that you learning, you do it, you see what happens, you ask, could I have done that better? Did it work at all? I mean, that the point that I'm trying to make is that I really feel like if humanity as a whole is going to move exponentially, then we need to recognize people who have already learned the technology of communicating well with spirit and bring them to the table.
Right.
And just help them be part of the decision-making process. But the person that understands the physics and the person that understands the climate issues and the person that understands that social issue in that particular place goes, oh, well, that metaphor answer means all this if we look at everybody else's wisdom. And those decisions are genius.
Right.
Any answer that maintains the current power structure, and I would even say the current understanding of power, is not a new answer. It is going to be a new version of the same problem.
The old thing, yeah. And
how many regimes have been toppled, you know, by the people wanting, you know, fairness and justice and whatever, only to find a new potentially despot end up running things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It happens again and again. My whole lifetime has been happening all over the world and in my own country. We have to learn.
Yeah, I know. I find myself shaking my head encountering the present day different nations or groups, you know, seeking to oppress and dominate another group or kill them off, commit genocide. And it's like, geez, will we ever learn? Right?
Right.
And so this gets to this question about like our relationship to that violence. What are your thoughts? I mean, you've already given a lot of them, like mm-hmm. we need to bring that message from spirit and bring all these different people together to interpret the message from spirit, to help people connect to their authenticity. So how does violence, you know, say more about this, you know, the despots, the violence, the mm-hmm. the ongoing cycles. Yeah. And our relationship to it.
Yeah. I mean, someone could be listening to us and think that what I'm saying is, as a Westerner, I should go to this indigenous person to get an answer for our problems. And
right.
And I'm not saying that. I'm saying I need to, as a Westerner, I need to humble myself and recognize there are other ways to think.
I hear you clearly.
Right. And I need to go learn how to think. And then I need to bring that having learned how to think back into these challenges and take responsibility myself for these challenges. Now, to connect back to something we said at the beginning, part of that also means I do my own healing work, so I do not continue to make my choices out of my unresolved trauma. And so this brings us back to the need to heal our own inner disconnection, right? But also the whole violence thing is that fundamental to all of this is this learning to relate again, to relate in your primary relationships, person to person and person to backyard, person to environment, like you one-to-one, and then the networks of those relationships. So now we start to talk about building community relationships, and then we start to talk about networks of those community relationships, and to recognize that's a different, fundamentally different structure for the way that we live, right? And so the thing is, most of us in the United States actually don't have a community self. We have a lot of trauma and wound around community that looks suspiciously like our family of origin pattern of woundedness, but we don't have a community self. There is a way in which I feel that in the United States, we have an extremely robust relationship with violence because it is paired with profound cultural denial about how violent we are.
Yeah.
As our the forefathers, right, of this United States of America were colonizers.
And, yeah.
And they violently ripped people and things from their homes and severed relationships because they don't value those relationships.
Well, and they didn't value relationship building across cultures and even across nations.
Well, they don't even value relationship building within their culture because they already don't hold people within their own church as equally valuable. The men and women are very differently treated, you know. So the issue, I think, for activism is to ask the question, number one, what actually is violence? What is the violence that we are wanting to stop doing? And where is it coming from? Instead of pointing at the violence over there, what is the violence that need, what is it? And where does it need to come from? Because I heard this indigenous man, his name is Dean Saunders, speaking on Tyson Yonka Porta's podcast, saying so clearly, I've never heard anyone in my own culture be this clear, that said simply that power exercised without authority is violence. That's really clear. So we need to deal with our relationship with power and learn from it and make new choices. And so what I feel happens, because it's really painful, no matter what side of that dynamic you're on, it's very painful to connect in with how severed our internal relationships are and how severed our relationships are with each other and from nature. And so I think when we start to talk about violence, we need to ask, what violence are we actually talking about? Because I believe that there is a great robust relationship with violence here in the United States and complete denial about it. And what the helping spirits have been endeavoring to teach me about how to live and as I reconcile with my ancestors. So one, there's no way around this. There is a level of getting real about the internal personal repair that has to start happening for us to be able to be in this. I've said this three times, so we're moving on. But there, I believe there also needs to be a conversation around violence, what expressions of violence need to stop, right? And what would a healthy relationship with violence be? Because I don't actually believe peace, respect, and justice necessarily means there isn't violence. Because what I see as I'm trying to educate myself about indigenous cultures is they have a very different relationship with violence. It is not there. Mm-hmm. They just have a very different relationship with it. There's no denial about it, and that it's held in the community. It's witnessed by everyone, and it serves a role. And we are so far away from being able to get that to that place. But I think whatever conversation we have around violence is going to require that we, A, get out of denial about it. So we've got deficiency and excess. So we have to find some balance around it and then have a conversation about it. Because what if there's something about a healthy relationship with violence that is necessary? Let's say if we're going to start initiating our children into adulthood, because there's so much of what doesn't work about our culture because people aren't adults. They're not being initiated. And I remember this one thing I studied with Maladoma Patrice Somme, who has since passed away. And he said,
he's an African shaman of the Dakara people. Yeah.
And he spoke to, from his perspective, looking at gang violence, he said, well, of course, these are uninitiated children doing what their culture is telling them is an initiatory experience, right? But when they come back for the community to say, yes, you're initiated, there's no community there. There are no elders there. It's just children, you know, young adults guiding young adults. Well, and it's also an initiation into a calling, you know, and where I think violence really comes, potentially has this place of our ability to start to understand it differently, is if we were actually initiated into adulthood, because initiation or our calling needs to be on the back of an initiation into adulthood. And we don't really do that at all anymore. Yeah. And there is something about that adult, someone who is an emotionally mature spiritual adult who can understand that maybe, again, I don't know, I'm just trying to learn, but I'm seeing this theme, this pattern, that there is a healthy relationship with violence that also allows it to happen, but it happens in a public context with very clear rules. So it's not about, like, you would never fight someone who is not your equal.
Right.
You never step into an unfair fight. And what I see in my culture is bullies and victims. It's all bullies and victims on grand scale and on personal scale, and even internal in people's own internal life with themselves. And so I just feel like we've lost a healthy relationship with it. And so now we want to either completely solve everything through violence, or deny that it has any place. And I think both are excessive positions.
So there's no sense of connection. So of that web of connection. There's a disconnect.
So this web of connection is absolutely shattered, and the violence just makes it harder and harder and harder for us to sit in the quality of discomfort we need to be in to have the kind of conversations that can start repairing things.
Yeah. The unconsciousness of violence, the unconscious relationship with violence. Yeah, I get that. What I want to do is I want to begin to wind this down. So I think probably our listeners would want to know, like, would you recommend any particular pathways to bring ourselves back into harmony, to deal with this system that we're in? You know, what would you recommend? I know it's not a simple answer to this question, and you've already touched upon it.
There is a simple answer. It's just not easy. And there's
not easy
many ways to do it. But the simple answer is to through your own self-investigation, to drill down in your own sense of spirit/religion and ask, you know, is this based on an idea that I'm separate from God? People need to come to terms with what fundamental belief they are carrying and what they are teaching. Mm-hmm. And what is, for me, the respite and the difference in these other systems of thinking is they are fundamentally based in the awareness, which we have proven and double proven and triple proven through many different facets of science, that we are connected to all things. There is no separation other than what we create in our own minds and then in our own hearts. And so that's the thing that people need to be really honest with themselves. What are you carrying as the fundamental relationship here? Are you one with all things? And then you carry that through all that you do with your life.
Yeah.
So one is learning how to learn from life as a teacher. Those are skills. Those are life skills. But the other, I really believe that adults need to pick up again the responsibility for all grownups, which is to be in relationship with the invisible world in a reliable way of gaining information. And
right.
A lot of people aren't. They don't have that responsibility. But in every shamanic culture I've ever visited, it is the head of the family's responsibility to be in relationship with spirit in a reliable way so they can guide the family and make decisions. I can't imagine being a grown-up in the world right now and not having help to make these decisions, like divine intervention to make
decisions. I know.
Yeah. And then really honestly, in answer to your question, the reason that I moved pieces, small pieces, but powerful pieces of my 4-year program, which is an in-person program, in online, is because I actually finally understood, if I believe this repair is at the core of what we all need to do, I need to make it available to people.
Yeah.
This energy body mastery and energy body clearing and advanced energy body clearing, it's this arc of the deep liberation process is where it's named on my website. But the point is, I really honestly believe we don't make new quality decisions until we gain this skill. And the point is, it's a skill. It's not like you need a practitioner to do this for you. It's a skill that you learn and an attitude you adopt about how you are within yourself and then how that is expressed out in the world. And it's a skill of learning to repair and learning what the signs are in life. When you need to repair a connection within yourself, from that place, we'll be able to do miracles. If we don't go there, we'll just keep extracting things, tearing things apart because we're torn apart internally from ourselves, because people fragment as a way to deal with what happens in life, and that needs to be repaired.
Yeah.
And from that place of repair, we can then make new decisions, new quality decisions, and learn to listen to the natural world around us. And so for people that are like, this lady and they're talking to spirits, fine, don't talk to spirits, but go talk to the nature, right? Because that's where we learned everything from anyway.
I mean, that's
really all of our courses are focused on repair internally. Repair with the ancestors, and then very particularly, how do you get repaired with your own shadow to repair them? And so everything that's online is some aspect of that theme, which is how do you repair those relationships?
Yeah, great. So I want to really thank you, but before we close, I want to give you an opportunity just to give your information again, how to contact you, where to find your course and so on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So my desperately in need of being redesigned website is at lastmaskcenter.org, org.com, right? And center in the American English, C-E-N-T-E-R.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. But the online curriculum is there right on the homepage. Some are live classes that happen annually. Some are there just standalone. You can register anytime and do it. Then the radio shows are at whyshamanismnow.com, and they're hours and hours of free
hours and hours there. Mm-hmm. Amazing and, programs.
And
and then how to contact you?
Oh, through the website is fine. There's a contact page there. You can reach us.
Great.
And there's also an ancestral prayer there for people who want to just start somewhere. And also, even if a course isn't running, you can get on a waiting list so that you'll be informed when it comes live again. And everything is offered continually because we feel as a community, this is our unique genius to offer. And so we're here for the long haul. It's not like the curriculum doesn't just keep changing. This is what we're offering for people to learn to repair. Yeah.
Great. Nice.
And bring that into their sphere of influence. You know, we're not trying to train everybody to be shamans. We're trying to train people to go do whatever they're doing as a better human.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Christina. This has been quite amazing. I mean, I've learned some things from you and you've stimulated some new thinking in me. And I really hope that our listeners have gained the same. I just want to thank you. I know you're a very busy person and I want to thank you for joining me. And I also like to always say a prayer of dedication for all the good that has come from the conversation we had. So may all this goodness, may all this wisdom be for the benefit of all beings, of our families, our communities, our nation, our world, of our cosmic family, that all beings will live in liberation, will be deeply repaired and free, and will live a life full of creative genius and give their beauty to the world. May it be so. Wado. Aho. All right.
Thank you, Rachel.
Be well. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining me, Rachel Mann, PhD, your host of this powerful podcast series, Destiny Lines, Sacred Activism for Peacemaking and Ending Violence. I hope you have been inspired into manifesting your dream for yourself personally or for or within your organization to dream forth a world of compassion, love, and peace. If you would like to find out more about me and my work, you may go to my website at rachelmannphd.com or email me at rachelmannphd@gmail.com. I offer individual energy healing sessions, a 3-month mentoring program for individuals wishing to magnetize their sacred service to the world, as well as programs, retreats, and classes for individuals and organizations who are inspired by the mission of sacred activism for peacemaking and ending violence. I look forward to you joining me and to hearing from you. Let's get started. There's no time to lose.